From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, summer is sizzling, and so is the news. This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and Joan Frawley Desmond talk about the Planned Parenthood videos you've heard about, assisted suicide opposition in California, and the new soon-to-be bishops in Los Angeles. Also, as the Register prepares its own Catholic College Guide, Dan Burke talks about Catholic colleges with the Cardinal Newman Society's Adam Wilson. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest today, Joan Frawley Desmond, is the Register's senior editor. Joan is an award-winning journalist, widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Today, she talks with Jeanette about those very provocative Planned Parenthood videos you may have seen, as well as other news items we're covering in the Register.
Joan, this is usually the time of year that both of us start deciding where we're going on vacation, and we get out of the door, and this dog days of summer, this is it. We're in the middle of it, yet it doesn't seem like the news has slowed down one bit. So our vacation ideas are really bothered by our vocation, which is to be Catholic journalist. And so what has the latest news been? And the hottest news really has been these Planned Parenthood videos. You've been covering a little bit of that. We've got a lot of people on our website who've covered different angles of this. What are the takeaways from this, I guess, now more than a week-long news story about Planned Parenthood?
I think there are a number of takeaways, Jeanette. And by the way, I hope you do have a good vacation when you get a chance. but the takeaways, I think the most interesting one for people is first just a reminder of the fundamental reality of what abortion is. And when you're talking about something as gruesome as the Harvard really draws people's attention, and all of a sudden this abstraction of abortion or the abortion debate becomes much more concrete. And I think a lot of people have been shocked to learn what they are finding from this video. And the videos are continuing to come out. So that's another issue for Planned Parenthood, which has really had to go on defense. So these videos, basically, which are produced by the Center for Medical Research, have taped conversations that were long in the making, thousands of hours and effort and research and development of a relationship to get to the point where they were having lunch with senior people at Planned Parenthood, including mm-hmm. their medical director. The medical director, over lunch, having sips of wine and bites of salad, described her strategies for removing, unborn children killed in abortions to maximize their value in terms of organ donation.
Mm-hmm, right.
Apparently there's a market for this, donated fetal hearts, lungs, livers. And so they get requests from medical researchers and perhaps others. I think we still don't know all the actors involved in this larger field of medical research or commercial
right.
research. But anyway, she described all this, including actually changing the abortion procedure to make sure that these organs would not be damaged in the process. And it makes her pretty horrific, just listening to this,
right.
this conversation, very casually discussed.
Yeah, you know what you mentioned, that what this does is just make us aware of the gruesome reality of abortion. I mean, abortion is bad. It's bad enough, and yet here they are maximizing in a monetary way, the very act of abortion, and that's a wake up call, it seems. How has the media treated this in terms of the secular media? Has it been a wake up call for some in the secular media?
I think they didn't want to deal with it, very similarly to the Gosnell case, this Philadelphia abortion doctor who was charged with murder patients and terrible mm-hmm. practices. There was very little traction originally. I followed a couple of different sites, and then gradually they have been forced to deal with it. And part of that is because the GOP in the House have taken this issue up, and they are running with it. There are going to be hearings. It's all going to come to light. So I think it's impossible to report on the GOP planning for hearings on the possible sale, illegal sale, and other questionable bioethical issues related to this practice.
Right.
It's hard to cover that if you don't actually acknowledge what, in fact, has precipitated this, which are these videos.
So right.
The videos have come out. One woman, of course, the Register has covered it very well, our bloggers, our news writers. I want to single out, though, one blogger, Molly Hemingway on the Federalist site, who has really held the media down on this. And she most recently has suggested there's some questions that they should really be asking right now, like how much money is made throughout the organ sale process?
Mm-hmm.
How do corporations make their way around the laws prohibiting the express sale of human organs? Issues across the board.
We'll see how these investigations turn out. I think it's very important. The man behind the investigations, David Leiden, he gave an interview to the Register. Many people have been interested what this man has to say. He is a Catholic, and really what he wants to do is bring the atrocities to light and show that the dignity of the human person is at stake here. That's really what this is all about. So I do want to talk about a few other things that are happening, though, some of them a little more positive than that. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Joan Frawley Desmond, and we're talking about the hottest news of the moment on the Register site and in the Catholic world.
You know, I've been thinking about a couple of other things that we should really discuss. One, of course, is the assisted suicide bill out in California. It's good in the midst of so much dark news and so many disturbing images that we're seeing, on the internet and all, to also have some positive news. And it's just great to hear that this bill that was very much a concern, that the push all over the country for assisted suicide. You see The Economist with a cover story celebrating assisted suicide and saying it should be the law of the land, here and everywhere else. California is the home of Brittany Maynard, and
mm-hmm,
she has
right.
been the poster girl for this Compassion and Choices, the main group promoting assisted suicide across the country, had YouTube videos of Brittany Maynard posted and just widely distributed. Her testimony was raised. She was a young California woman dying of brain cancer. She said it was going to be a painful death. She, for whatever reason, discounted the hospice, all the palliative care available to cancer patients in similar situations, and made this very public case that California needed to change its laws. And then she went to Oregon and actually died there under the law that permits assisted suicide.
That's right.
So people were worried about what was going to happen here. And at the end of the day, we got really good news. Basically, the law passed in one part, but it got to the assembly, and a number of assembly members, a number of them Latino, said, we are not comfortable with this law. We want to look at it more carefully. And they were not ready to go ahead and move it out of the health committee. So it's basically stalled from what I understand.
That's
There's
true,
some
yeah.
chance it could come back in August. There could also be a state ballot next year. But right now things are looking much better.
It's good news, and we're grateful to the coalition that helped to lobby against that bill to make greater awareness. Of course, that was Archbishop Gomez in L.A. and Bishop Van in Orange County and lots of others, not only the Catholic Church, who got behind the opposition. So it's really a positive news there, and we have to keep on this issue because, as people say, as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. So I'm glad that it's stalled right now. There's another news story, Joan, out of L.A., which is really interesting, and that is that they are going to be receiving, not too long from now, three new auxiliary bishops. So they're bishop-elects that were announced earlier this week, and who are they?
Well, there's some very interesting people. Of course, the one that everyone noticed and made the news all over the country, I saw the Washington Post had reported it, and that is now Bishop-elect Father Barron, or I guess Bishop-elect Barron is really how I have to refer to him now. And he is the founder of Word on Fire social media, Media Empire, which has just done an incredible job. One of the things I love about what he does online is he'll take a film, you know, it could be a sci-fi film, and he'll just be talking in a very relaxed way. He'll give a little pithy review of the film, and then he'll talk about maybe how the film reflects the need for transcendence.
That's right.
The human need for transcendence, and I think it's a strategy that has been quite effective. You know, you get young people online; they may not want to hear what the catechism has to say right off the bat, but they're going to be willing to hear this very interesting priest talk about, you know, a film that they've been attracted to and stirred by, and they're not quite sure why. So he has this kind of strategy. He's, of course, also well known as the president of the seminary there in Chicago, and has worked closely before with the late Cardinal George on beefing up seminary. So he's an academic, he's a seminary president, and he's a social media strategist and presence. So he's a wonderful choice for the entertainment capital of the world. I think I know Archbishop Gomez has tried to lay a strategy for social media. There's a lot of programs in place and those that are still coming online out there in Los Angeles. So I think he'll be an enormous asset. But I also want to talk to you about one of the bishop-elects, Bishop Joe Brennan. And, of course, you may recall that the Register has a special connection with him because our blogger, Shemka Fisher, he's actually the uncle to her husband. So we have a post from Shemka talking about Uncle Joe in the news from L.A., which was fun. But he said it was a sacrifice for him. He loves being a priest. I spoke with him today. Loves being a priest. Would really, you know, he said my last Saturday, a couple of Saturdays ago, I guess, when the nuncio first called him, he said, I just had a wonderful day as a priest. I had done some marriage counseling. I'd spoke with a young person. You know, I had looked at some other things, you know, just with all the people he wants to be at, and a little poignant sense that he will now, you know, be called away perhaps to another
area
of responsibility.
Right, that's right. Now, and there's one last person. We are just about out of time, but we need to talk about Monsignor David O'Connell.
Yeah,
who is he?
He has a wonderful record. I don't want to forget him. He has a wonderful record. He's especially known, Jeanette, for his outreach to gangs in South Central Los Angeles. And just a remarkable person when you think about Pope Francis and his exhortation that we really reach out to the fringes and that we accompany people. That is Bishop-elect O'Connell to the T.
That's great.
From everything I've heard. I mean, just a remarkable man, well known to people in the community, revered across the city for his outreach and very close work with gangs and other community members to make differences in these really tough, gritty areas.
Well, we have a lot to look forward to out of L.A. It's already a wonderful diocese, and these three bishops will add so much to it. So, Joan, thanks so much for running through the hottest news of the week. We appreciate the reporting that you do, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeanette.
When we return, we'll talk about Catholic colleges with the Cardinal Newman Society's Adam Wilson. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Adam Wilson, is Director of Communications at the Cardinal Newman Society, which works to renew and strengthen the Catholic identity of Catholic colleges and universities.
Thanks so much for having the Cardinal Newman Society on Register Radio again. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're grateful for the work that you do. And, of course, Adam Wilson, as the managing editor of the Newman Guide, you have your hands in and your eyes in and your ears around the church, evaluating all of the various entities to determine where they're headed from the standpoint of their Catholic identity, which is what we're talking about here today. And not too long ago, you wrote an article for the National Catholic Register entitled, Will Catholic Colleges Learn from Marian Court's Closing? Which is a great question. Tell us a bit about Marian Court and maybe begin, if you have a sense, for when it was in its heyday and if Catholic identity was strong, and then how that eroded and resulted in their closing this year.
Sure thing, Dan. So the Cardinal Newman Society has been evaluating and monitoring Catholic higher education, and more recently K-12 education as well in the church, over the past 20 years or so. And we've looked at a lot of colleges over the years that have really downplayed their Catholic identity, and we've highlighted how that's really been detrimental to their institutional stability and how they are reaching out to students and families and attracting their next generation of students. So over the past several decades, I think Marian Court could be, while not exactly having all the information about everything that it's gone through over its 50-year history, I think it could be held up as a sort of example for a lot of other Catholic colleges that are in the United States. A lot of these institutions were founded by faithful religious orders 50, 60, sometimes 100 years ago or more. And during the 60s and the 70s, we saw a relinquishing of the ownership of the religious orders at a lot of these colleges. I believe at Marian Court College, the Sisters of Mercy was the founding religious order. And like a lot of institutions, like a lot of Catholic institutions, Marian Court had a heyday. It had a generation, several generations probably, or I guess if it's 50 years old, probably just the beginning few generations of students that were faithful to the church and faithful faculty and faithful administrators. But like a lot of other institutions, Catholic higher education institutions throughout the country, we saw sort of a decline in the fidelity of the faculty, a decline in the fidelity of the direction that the administration was leading the institution. And you're left with an institution in our modern times that many parents and students that are looking for a faithful Catholic education, a place where they might not recognize it as Catholic. So we highlighted on in our report how there's several ways in which Marian Court appears to even hide its Catholic identity or downplay it as not being important. So that's more or less the perspective that we're coming from in this report. We're looking at a college that was founded by a faithful religious order 50 years ago that today seems to not give much precedence or not give much emphasis to its Catholic identity.
Well, there's been a few things that have happened that have impacted Catholic educational institutions since the Council. Of course, following the Council, what Pope Benedict called the Council of the Media, mm-hmm. rather than the actual Council, caused a great deal of confusion in religious orders and that sort of thing. So we see a lot of theological degradation in seminaries and religious institutions. And then there's also the driving factor, I think, which is the financial pressures and the feeling like they need to attract more students and that sort of thing. Do you have a sense for Marian Court, what the primary impetus was for their downplaying Catholic identity? Was it that theological confusion that settled in after the Council, or is it also related to enrollment issues?
That's a great question. And I think that the leaders of Marian Court, in their statements that they made announcing the closing, they mentioned the financial pressures. And a lot of those reports also mentioned how it's a very tuition dependent institution, and it had declining enrollment over the years, and that's just a bad mixture for an institution that relies very heavily on tuition.
Right.
So while I think theology plays into that, I think it you have to consider it from the perspective of what was the college marketing to students. So if its enrollment was declining, then we need to ask ourselves, the college should have asked itself, if it didn't, how are we marketing ourselves to students? And are the criteria that we're placing a heavy emphasis on, are these things that students are looking for, and are these things that make us stand out from the crowd? And from my analysis in my interview with Marine Corps President Denise Hammond, I don't believe the college did that. I asked her several different questions. I asked her about what are the main criteria that the college uses when marketing itself to students. And she did mention that the college was Catholic, but only at the end, and after mentioning sort of a litany of different things like criminal justice major, being a commuter college, and things like that. And if you contrast that to a faithful Catholic college, such as, say, Christendom College in Front Royal, Virginia, where they come right out and say, we're an institution dedicated to the Catholic Church, to the magisterium of the Catholic Church, and that's the emphasis that they're placing in all of their marketing materials, then you're going to see a very different result. You're going to see, in the case of Marion Court, and as acknowledged by the president, a situation in which the Catholic identity played a very minimal role, if any role at all, in attracting students.
The only thing she mentioned in her article was that, in your article, was that we feel Catholic in the way we teach. I mean, basically.
Right. It seems almost they're assuming that the Catholic identity has an influence, but there doesn't seem to be any practical application of integrating the Catholic identity in how they're marketing to students. So, I mean, I think that's kind of an epidemic, really, among Catholic higher education. I think a lot of institutions assume, since they were founded by a religious order or they were founded as Catholic by a diocese or some other arrangement, that identity will sort of perpetuate automatically by just giving it sort of a nominal acknowledgement.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that. At the faithful Catholic colleges that we recommend in the Newman Guide, we see an intentional emphasis on Catholic identity throughout the entire institution. So we're looking at the governance and the mission of the college. We're also looking at how Catholic identity plays out in the classroom, in the chapel, in student life and residence life, especially in the dorms, in the dorm situation.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Adam Wilson, who's the managing editor of the Newman Guide, which is a very important publication along with the Register's Catholic College Guide. If you're thinking about sending your children to college in coming years, there's no better resource than these two, the Newman Guide and the Register College Guide, than these to help you understand whether or not the university you're sending your kids to are worthy of the tuition or are going to help them to be more fully Catholic. Well, let me ask you this, Adam. What are the signs of a college that may be slipping? Now, you mentioned just now that how they deal with the dorms, and I know that some dorms are co-ed, which is definitely a red flag. But sometimes even good institutions can begin to slip and allow, let's say, male and female visits and things like that, which seem to be eroding what otherwise looks like a great commitment to Catholicity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what a lot of Catholic colleges have lost over the years is the idea that they're responsible not only for the intellectual formation of students, but also the moral formation of students while they're under their care. And that can play out in many different ways, but in general, Catholic universities should look at their residence life policies and see how is Catholic identity influencing what they're doing practically on campus. You know, we see at a lot of the faithful Catholic colleges this trend now of having single-sex dorms. So a lot of the ones that were founded over the past couple decades that are faithful, like Christendom College, Thomas Aquinas College, Wyoming Catholic College, and others like that, we're seeing single-sex dorms as sort of the new standard for faithful Catholic higher education. And there's other larger institutions that sort of fell away from that in past years and past decades that are coming around again. The Catholic University of America was brought back to single-sex dorms a couple years ago by President John Garvey. And then just last year, we announced in the Newman Guide that University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota, thanks in a great deal, I think, to its president, Monsignor Shea, they were brought around to having single-sex dorms also. the policy that you set up front for students is going to not only have a great practical application on campus in terms of leading to a campus culture that's founded on the assumption of chastity, but it's also going to it's going to be a teaching moment, right? It's going to be a way that the college can help the students inculcate this idea that chastity is the assumption. Chastity is the way that we're all called to live our life. So it's not a draconian negative policy that's imposed on the students by the college, but rather it's a way of life that we're all called to as Christians, as Catholics.
Adam, we're running out of time. How can people find out more about the Newman Guide and read all the good work that you do?
Dan, we'd like to invite readers, your listeners, to come to our website at CardinalNewmanSociety.org to find out more about what we do. And our website, thenewmanguide.com, has our recommendations on all of the Catholic colleges that we recommend. And we also have a map of the country that shows where all of these colleges are located in case parents and students, you know, want to know what's close to them so that they can arrange visits on campus and things like that. We also provide a very detailed chart that gives the most important information about all of the colleges up front, such as single-sex dorms and math times and other things like that. So we'd invite your listeners to come to thenewmanguide.com to find out more about these colleges.
Great. Adam, thank you so much for all the great work that you do at the Cardinal Newman Society. Please keep up the good work and help us understand where we can invest our donations and our prayers for our and send our kids so that they can be more holy.
Thanks so much, Dan. God bless your work.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.